On October 1st, 2024, the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library hosted a forum at the Belgrade Community Library for the candidates for House District 67 and 68.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Belgrade Community Library. My name is Liz. I'm the Adult Services Librarian here. Thank you for attending the candidate forum. This forum is for information only and does not endorse or promote for or against any candidates on the upcoming ballot. Quick reminders to silence your cell phones. And if you need a restroom, there is one in the back along with our emergency exit. Tonight we're hearing from the candidates running for Legislative House District 67-68 with the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters moderating. This meeting is being recorded by KBGM 95.9, Gallatin Valley Community Radio, and will be available to listen to as a podcast on their website. The video of this event will also be recorded to the library's YouTube page. Ballots for this election will be mailed out on October 11th and can be returned by mail or in person from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, at the County Election Office in Bozeman. Ballots are due and must be received by 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 5th. In addition to mail-in ballots, voters have the option to vote in person at the Gallatin County Election Office or at polling places on November 5th. If you need to update your voter registration or still need to register to vote, stick around. She will help you over there at that table. And I also wanted to mention the Vote 411. It is a nonpartisan voter information website. That's really great. So if you get your ballot and you don't know who some of these people are, type in your address. It'll pull up your ballot and give you information on the candidates. Thank you to everyone for being here and for giving the public an opportunity to ask you questions. And finally, a special thanks to our forum sponsors, the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman Public Library, and the Belgrade Community Library Foundation. We'll now turn our time over to our moderator, who will explain the rules and then get started with the forum.
And you have to excuse me, I might repeat a couple things, but that's all right. Good evening and welcome. My name is Jane Arnson-Schumacher. I am tonight's moderator. On behalf of the event sponsors, which include Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Belgrade Public Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library. And the Belgrade Library puts a lot of effort into this. They put the ad. I want to give a hand to Liz and her staff. I just show up. They do all the work. So I want to mention quickly a few things. But one is that there is a forum tomorrow night at the Bozeman Public Library. It is on CS 126 and 127. There'll be proponents and opponents of 126 and 127 there to explain it and they explain their positions. And I think it'll be, I need some understanding. I know that. So you're welcome to attend. I'd like to introduce our candidates for tonight. From House District 67, Jedediah Hinkle and Carl Anderson. And from House District 68, is Caleb Hinkle and Alexandra Colafrancesco. Before we continue, I will go over tonight's forum and rules. Welcome. I'm seeing some faces that from my friends from the other forums. It's nice to see you all. Thank you. Before we continue, I'll go over the rules format. Each candidate will have up to 2 minutes to introduce themselves and explain their qualifications and why they're running for this particular office. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for to answer one question that has been provided to them in advance. I will then open the floor to questions from the audience. Please stand when you ask your questions. I think those around you can hear it better. But if you are having trouble hearing the questions from the audience, just let me know. Raise your hand or something, and I will repeat it as best I can. Questions may be directed at one or more candidates. However, even if you direct a question at one candidate, all of them will have the opportunity to respond if they wish to do so. Candidates will have answers by the candidate, but we'll be limited to 1 minute within reason. Some of them just can't. We're going to time it, and we'll ask them to do the best they can, but some of them simply cannot be answered in 1 minute. So we'll be a little loose on that one. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for a closing statement. I want to thank and introduce tonight's timer, Linda Gable, who will be timing for us tonight. So rules, the moderator will intervene if questions, answers are repetitive or if courtesy is not shown. The timer will inform each candidate when they have 1 minute remaining, 30 seconds remaining, and no time remaining. Candidates are asked to finish promptly when your time is up. The moderator will ask members of the audience to pose questions without comments or editorializing. Tonight is not a time for our audience to voice their views or try to convince candidates to change their views. This is an opportunity to help you with the voting process and to understand the positions of your candidates. The forum, I'm going to repeat it, I guess, has been designed for the audience to hear the views of the candidates, not those of the audience. It is important to note here that it takes courage to run for public office. And we, at the very least, owe them our courtesy and to hear where they're coming from. The courtesy to our candidates even includes no sneering or snickering from the audience. If a candidate is mentioned by name or referred to very specifically by their opponent, then the opponent will have equal time to respond. If questions from the audience can be answered with a yes or no, the candidates will be allowed to qualify or explain their answers. This forum is meant to help voters become familiar with the positions of the candidates, not to force candidates to select a one-word answer that they don't feel comfortable with. Again, the moderator will intervene if questions or answers are repetitive and courtesy is not shown. Now, first of all, the candidates will each have 2 minutes for their opening statement. And we will start with Jedediah.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm actually surprised how many people showed up, given we have a national vice president debate tonight, which I was eager to watch, so I guess I'll miss the first half an hour of that. But so I am Jedediah Hinkle. I'm the current representative of House District 67, which actually is pretty much now just Belgrade with the new lines. I used to go out towards Sipes Canyon, but now it's pretty much just city limits. So I live here, and I am a small business owner in Belgrade, and I spent 18 years of my life working in the field of fisheries biology after getting my degree in fish and wildlife management from MSU. I was elected to the House of Representatives in 2020 and have served 2 terms so far. I'm running for my 3rd term. In the legislature, I have served on seven different committees, but most consistent committees are judiciary and fish and game. I was selected for leadership my freshman session in the House and was chosen as the chairman of the Legislative Administration Committee. And last session, I served as the vice chair of the Fish and Game Committee. Some of the legislation that I've worked on, I've worked on legislation that supports our business community, provided access to public lands, supporting individual freedom and freedom from burdensome government mandates, education transparency, informing voters of fiscal impacts to their households, and self-defense, and the Second Amendment, just to name a few. And I am seeking re-election to continue working on these issues and other issues. Thank you.
Well, we'll now move to Carl.
Hello, everyone. My name is Carl Anderson, and I grew up in Forsyth, Montana, over on the eastern part of the state. 20 years ago, our communities would have looked very similar. We were a community of families who put food on their tables by working as teachers, coal miners, railroad workers, grocery clerks, restaurant cooks, bartenders, healthcare workers, veterinarians, and the list goes on. My parents, now retired, were healthcare workers. They were a combined team of a lab technician and a family physician. And there were times when they were the only ones available for their jobs in the 4th largest county in the state. Through their tireless work, they managed to raise four boys, two of whom went on to serve in the military. One became a union pipe fitter. And then there was me, the one who used all of that money they saved to send four boys to college to spend the next 10 years of my life in the Montana Public University system. In that 10 years, I obtained a bachelor's and master's in clinical psychology at MSUB, and then moved over to MSU to obtain a bachelor's in biochemistry with a minor in astrobiology. I was a hair's width away from becoming a doctor or a college professor, but as I saw going on in this country, but as what I saw going on in this country kept eating away at me, I knew that I had to take my knowledge in the sciences and enter the realm of public policymaking. For the past 6 years, I have been teaching young folks the ins and outs of that world at the local and state levels, so as to make them the change makers of tomorrow. Through that work, I have personally registered thousands of voters in the state of Montana, and even knocked thousands of doors to keep to save things like the 6 mil levy, which makes college more affordable for Montana residents attending one of the many universities in Montana, including Montana Tech. I am the Democratic candidate for House District 67, and with your vote, I would like to represent the people of Belgrade.
Thank you. And we'll go next to Caleb Hinkle.
Okay. Hi, folks. I'm Caleb Hinkle, House District 68, running for my third term there. Essentially, the new district goes essentially from the interstate to Norris Road to the Madison River and to Jackrabbit Lane. But yeah, so I'm on my third, and so essentially I also work and live within the district. A few of my little committees that I've been on is I've been the chair of legislative administration last session. And as well as I'm on the Judiciary Committee, as well as Health and Human Services, and my first session was tax. A few of the legislation topics I have addressed has been child custody bills, as well as taxpayer protection bills and judicial reform. I've also established my first bill was the Muzzleloader Heritage Hunt, and I brought other sportsman-related legislation here. And so, thank you.
And Alex, you might want to correct me on your last name.
Cola,
it's your
Francesco.
Chance now.
Yeah, Cola Francesco. It's very long and complicated. My name is Alex Cola Francesco, and I'm running to represent you in House District 68. My adult life, most short, has been one of public service. While in the Montana Guard, I served and am serving as an 11 Bravo Infantryman or Direct Combat Specialist. In this capacity, I volunteered to fight wildfires. I volunteered to be a CO in Deer Lodge Prison during COVID. I was activated by the governor to restore order to Washington, D.C. after the January 6th insurrection. And I'm a war veteran, spending 7 months in Syria during the Syrian Civil War on anti-ISIS ground missions, where my life was put at risk several times. When I returned home, my motivation to serve my community was not diminished. I joined my local Veterans of Foreign Wars and American Legion posts and volunteered to aid them in nonprofit work. I volunteered countless hours to register hundreds of Montanans to vote through nonpartisan nonprofits and knocked doors to spread awareness for the public land and watershed issues we face here at the local level. After watching the dysfunction of Montana politics directly while working as a nonpartisan staff member, remote meeting coordinator, at the state legislature for two sessions, where I got a letter of recommendation from both a Republican and a Democratic state senator, by the way, I saw this broken system up front and became convinced I had to act. My desire to serve the public is making me step up now. The system is broken. The residents of House District 68 are paying the price for it. As your representative, I promise to fight for you with all I've got, just like I've always been doing, and fix the broken system that is hurting your everyday lives, rights, and future.
Thank you, Alex. What do you consider the most important challenge facing our state, and how do you propose to address it in the legislature?
Well, I believe that one of the biggest problems facing Montana is out-of-state interests who see Montana as one great big commodity to be packaged and sold off for a profit. Don't get me wrong, I'm not one of those anti-out-of-staters that thinks that no one else should be allowed here. More people brings more ideas, more art, more points of view, more small businesses, and more jobs. And this lends to a vibrant and rich culture. What I don't like is people thinking our culture is some kind of tourist backdrop that can be turned into a dollar sign. Montanans have always been against big government, and we were proudly purple, and the governor's seat could turn on a dime because we voted for the policies that someone promised. Now we vote on party lines based on the color of their tie. The greatest problem facing our state is the dysfunction of government, which is fueled by the infusion of culture war politics into everyday discourse about how we ought to govern ourselves. And what I would do with the state legislature to attempt to counteract these problems is focus on the issues that are directly important to everyday Montanans, and especially as a representative of Belgrade, specifically those problems which Belgrade is facing. I know that the people of Belgrade want, they want better roads, they want better sidewalks, they want an underpass for the Jackrabbit intersection. Belgrade is now the eighth largest city in the state of Montana, and it is neck and neck constantly for being the fastest growing community in the state. And I will fight to make sure that we focus on getting the infrastructure dollars necessary to accommodate that growth.
Caleb.
Yeah, I'd say to answer that question, I'd say taxes in general. It seems like every level of government in this country is just nickel and diming the taxpayer at every aspect of it. There's a certain thing in the Colorado's Constitution that they put in 1992, and it's called the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And it's essentially checks city, county, as well as state spending based on population, as well as anytime there is excess revenue within the state that is automatically returned to the taxpayer. It has been to great success, has an 80% approval rating within Colorado, even after Colorado has gone blue. And essentially, I plan to take, as a bill, a section of that, and essentially that return the excess revenue to the taxpayer as a legislative referendum, as it's called. So it would be a vote to the citizens of Montana whether they want that excess revenue automatically returned. As of right now, the only way to get excess revenue back to the taxpayer is to either do a special session, either call in a special session, which is a very difficult process to do. We had a variety of special session calls that all failed this last year, or wait until the next biennium and address that. So the problem that comes is you have spenders up there and you have those that want to get that money back to the taxpayer because it doesn't belong to the state to begin with. And excess revenue is over-collected taxes. And so essentially last session we had $3 billion in excess revenue come into the state. $1 billion of that went back to the taxpayers. So essentially, I believe this would be a Montana first policy. The taxpayer will get to vote on it. It won't be just finalized and up to the legislature. Thank you.
And Alex?
So if I had to use one word to describe Montana, separate from any other state in this country, it would have to be freedom. People come here for freedom, and they stay here for freedom. The freedoms and rights guaranteed to us by the Montana Constitution are more valuable to us than high-paying jobs in, large cities and in foreign states. The biggest threat facing our state right now is a degradation of these state constitutional freedoms that are really so important to us. We have a right to privacy, but the state is requiring government ID to visit certain websites. We have a right to health and safety, but new attempts are made every election cycle and every year to block women's health care, while at the same time, the GOP attempts to sunset Medicaid, which countless in my district alone rely upon. We have a right to transparent government and to participate in it, but a public initiative, CI-128, had illegal attempts to block it from being on the ballot and voted upon. I spoke with farmers in the community by Churchill, and they expressed these concerns to me. Once these attempts to degrade our freedom become a reality, we are set to lose everything that makes Montana special. We lose what we love about it. In the legislature, I will fight for our freedoms, mine and yours, tooth and nail. I will vote against each and every attempt to limit our state constitutional freedoms made by anybody, regardless of party, Democrat or Republican.
Thank you.
All right, my turn.
Yes.
All right. So what I think is one of the most pressing issues that we have to face next legislative session is the property tax issue. When the tax assessments came out in 2023, the legislature had already adjourned. It quickly became one of the hottest issues in the state, and I can guarantee it will be one of the most prominent issues in the next 2025 session. Although the assessments did not come forward until after the session ended, the blessing is that the Republicans passed the property tax rebates. $1,350 were available to homeowners to help offset the hike in property taxes, the hike brought on by the housing market on steroids during the pandemic. There are many ideas out there how to address property taxes, and the challenge is to find the right ones and then coalesce around those ideas and get them passed. One idea that I think could actually be bipartisan, keep our fingers crossed, supported, is to reinstate the homestead exemption. This exemption, for example, would exempt the first maybe $30,000 or $50,000 of a home value from being taxed. This will save the taxpayers, especially in a time when home prices are generally still rising. Another solution I am looking into is to use a stream of tax revenue that I personally believe should belong to the counties and cities rather than the state, and to use that tax revenue for property tax relief. Really, though, the biggest challenge will be to find the right solution or solutions out of many and get at least 76 legislators on board to pass those measures. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we will take questions from the audience. I will warn you that we're going to respect the time that the candidates agreed to be here. So there is, I think we'll be fine, but there is a chance that we'll run out of time before all of you get your questions in, and I'll just put that in advance. Okay, now, is anyone interested in a question? Elizabeth.
Jen and Kayla, 2 years ago in this very room, you promised us you would fight against property tax increases. So, Jen, you just said that it came at the end of the session. No, the Department of Revenue told the governor, and the legislature had this information, where you could regulate to 0.94% rather than the 1.35%. My property taxes increased 45%. Why did you give up and let this happen just so the governor could put it in his operating budget?
And you asked Jedediah and Caleb, right? Isn't that who you're
correcting?
Okay.
Did she just repeat the last portion?
Will you repeat the last portion?
Why did you give up and let this happen just so the governor could put this on his in his operating budget? And why did you let this happen? Because you said it happened, but at the end of the session, but it didn't. You guys knew going in.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, who wants to start? Either
one. Well, essentially. Yeah.
You did.
So I'm one of maybe six that went up to the legislature with property taxes in mind and tried to bring a meaningful long-term solution. We may have had a supermajority up there, but we did not have a conservative majority. And that's the same case every single session that goes on. When these big bills that have a chance of actually affecting and helping the taxpayer out, the more liberal Republicans and the Democrats will side together on the House floor and kill that legislation. My specific bill would have brought an aspect of that Tabor I brought up earlier, which would have capped city and county spending. For example, 80% of all property taxes collected is collected at the city, county, and school levels, not the state. The other 20% roughly is through the state, and that goes to some mills voted with the universities. And no, we did not know beforehand. We did not even know how large the excess revenue was going to be. It's like chasing this this kind of rabbit going along. We keep hearing the next week after the next week that this excess revenue that's been growing within the budget has, 1 week it's 500,000, next week it's 1 billion, and then kept going up throughout the entire session. At the very end of the session, it was around 3 billion in excess revenue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So to start out with, no, I did not know what the rates were. I'm not on the tax committee. I don't have those discussions. When I see the tax bills, generally they come out on the floor. But I was instrumental in also helping out on that bill that Caleb had mentioned. We actually had to try the bill twice because the cities and the counties came in to try to kill it. So you have counties who are, you have Maco, who is funded by property taxes, they're funded by the counties, come in and work to kill a bill that was designed to save the taxpayers in the property taxes. So we did work on that bill, and we had to try it twice. We finally got it out to the floor, and of course, what Caleb had mentioned, the Democrats joined together with a handful of liberal Republicans, and they killed it on the floor. So we did try. The next thing was the rebates. So we, I actually had a bill that I drafted that actually gave more money back to the taxpayers than what actually came out of the legislature. But knowing that property taxes were a burden, and even though it was subsidized by income tax surplus, we made sure and got those rebates out, again, without the help of the Democrats who voted against all of those bills. So I got to stop because I ran out of time. That's quick.
Yeah, it is quick. That minute is quick. So Carl and Alex, either one of you or both of you are also able to respond if you like, even though it wasn't directed at you. So if you would like to make any response, you're good. Okay. I don't think, go ahead.
Hi. Public lands are a super hot topic right now. They were last night too. So I have a question on that for all the candidates. For the candidates who are not holding positions now, it's more of a futuristic, and for the candidates who already hold positions, the question is, what are you or have you done to protect public lands, or what will you do to protect the public lands?
And are you clear on the questions? I think it's Kayla Ansel, it's your turn to go first, Alex.
Mine, no, Alex.
Alex.
So a big thing about public lands is we need to be able to access and utilize public lands, which means corner crossings, right? Corner crossings can't be illegal. It is, in my mind, criminal that public lands exist, and yet they're being cordoned off by wealthy people who buy up the plots of land surrounding them, and you can't cross the corners of two pieces of public land to access the other, so you can hunt on that. So that is certainly something I will fight for, is corner crossings to be allowed, and I think that's a nonpartisan thing. I think I've spoken to many Republicans that agree. There's just a few very powerful Republicans that are opposed to that idea, that are clogging that up. But I would work with the majority to help get that done.
Jedediah.
Okay, so in this issue of protecting public lands, thanks to Democrat Governor Steve Bullock in 2015 and the Democrat Party and a few handful of Republicans, it created an issue by which now we are actually looking at a transfer of federal public lands to the state for management right now. We are looking at that tens of thousands of acres. In 2017 and in 2020, Republicans brought a bill that would prohibit any transferred land, federal transferred land, to the state. The bill said that land could not be sold off. I supported that legislation in 2017, and I supported it on the House floor in 2020. Caleb did also. Guess who didn't support that bill? The Democrats. The Democrats opposed the bill that would have protected our land from being sold off should it be transferred to the state. So that is an example right there on how we have tried to work to protect public lands.
Thank you, Carl.
Through my work in the past several years, I have worked to educate the public and promote things like the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is a large national fund that provides funding to recreational areas around the nation, really. But of course, we benefit greatly from that here in Montana. We also work to promote the Blackfoot Clearwater Stewardship Act, as well as the protection of Badger 2 medicine. And in general, these attempts, the attempts that were made with these pieces of legislation were to kind of balance the amount of, you know, balance recreation with protecting our natural resources and public lands. I would continue to support legislation that finds the correct balance, because we have lots of resources here for recreation, for industry, and I think it's just important to keep a reasonable balance.
Thank you. And Caleb.
Thank you. Just to add, so essentially both Jed and I are avid hunters, and essentially that bill he was referring to, if somebody wants to go look it up on the legislative website, is House Bill 320 from Steve Gunderson. That's the 2021 version. Essentially, it's just right there. It's one, like two sentences at the very bottom that essentially state that the state cannot sell off any land that may get transferred by a court decision or transferred by an act of Congress, something like that. There's a variety of ways the land can be transferred. And essentially, we're just saying, Republicans in Montana, we're stating that we support public lands and we do not agree with selling them off privately. Thank you.
Anyone else? Go ahead.
This is kind of related to what you've just been talking about, state public land. And not too long ago, House Bill 521 made all of us that use state public land enabled to pay our fair share for the cost of maintaining and managing that land by a conservation license that we'd be required to have if we used it. Hunters and fisher people already do that and pay a lot more than this was. I'm interested because I looked up the record on this, and I'd like to know from all of you, do you favor that, or do you oppose it? I happen to know, Jedediah, that you voted against that, and I'd like to know why. Each of you favor or oppose it.
Thank you. Jedediah, did you understand? Are you good with the question?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Just a quick, can I reference, was that from last session? Yeah. Was that last session's bill?
The prior session. I don't think it was 23.
Okay.
It was 20.
Yeah, I think I know whose bill that was. So that bill was sponsored by Denley Logie. And the history of it is that fish and wildlife property and access sites are being overrun by the public, using them for tubing or whitewater rafting or such. But they're actually paid for by the sportsmen and people who purchased conservation licenses. So the people, a lot of the people who are using and taking up all the parking areas and everything, are actually not paying in for the services of that site. So there was a bill that I partially supported last session that was a better bill than the one that you're referencing. But the reason why I voted against it is because I think our rivers and streams should be open to everyone. And I understand that, you know, the fishing access sites are paid by those people with conservation licenses and sportsmen's dollars. But I still feel that our rivers and streams are public and that they should be easily accessed by the public. And I don't want to go down a route where you're having to pay to use our rivers and streams in Montana. So that's why I initially opposed the bill. There was a better bill last session that combined it, and I don't have time to go into that, but thank you for that question. Yeah,
Carl.
Could I get a clarifier on the question? I don't know if I fully understand.
What?
Could you repeat the question?
Well, my interest is whether you would oppose or favor a conservation license so that all users of state land could help pay for the maintenance and management of that land. That's what I understood the original bill that was passed to do. It was a bipartisan effort, as I recall. And would you favor or oppose it? Or did you favor or oppose it? Yeah.
If I'm understanding, I mean, I'm not an expert on the legislation you're referring to. But I feel that, you know, because our public lands and recreation areas are such a vital part of our, not only of our lives here in Montana, but also as, part of the industry here in Montana, I believe I would support, other forms of finding funding to maintain those areas. So, yes.
Caleb.
Yeah, thank you. I do not exactly remember how I voted in the 2021 session on this specific bill. If I had a hunch, I was probably a no, just mainly because we see a lot of these little bills come up that essentially just add, take money here, take money here, take money here, take money here, and it builds up over time. And as Jed kind of went into, Well, I don't believe in sort of nickel-diming the populace, but as Jed went into also, that our public lands and rivers and streams should be open to everyone.
Thank you.
So I'm not familiar with the content of this specific bill, but I can give you my ideas on the concept. I'm support of a conservation license. I think if public land is going to be utilized, it needs to be maintained with the dollars of the people who are utilizing it, make it self-sustainable, because otherwise that money is coming from other places. People have to wrangle for it in the legislature, and sometimes money just won't come. And these things won't maintain an upkeep. If there's a conservation license, it'll stay in good quality condition. They won't have to fight for money every session to help maintain it. For rivers and streams, I'd have to look more into it. I'm not certain I support rivers and streams explicitly being part of this, but I would have to do more research.
Did I see somebody in the back that I... Did you have a question?
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I guess we were talking about the corner crossing, but I never heard exactly, everybody supports public land, but what do you feel about the actual corner crossing?
Yeah. So the corner crossing, I believe it should be absolutely legal. To give some context, when pieces of land were divided up, some of them were divided up in square sections, right? So there are pieces of private property that can surround public property, and you could say it's trespassing if you cross past the private property to access the public land to hunt. Now, when there's two squares, right, that are pieces of public land and the corners are touching each other, it is illegal to cross that corner. That is trespassing. That is absolutely ridiculous. Corner crossing should 100% be legal. From the people I've spoken to, it is extremely bipartisan. This should be the case. There are some very powerful people that own a lot of land that want it to be illegal, and so it is, but it needs to be fought against because it's to the disbenefit of hunters and Montanans.
And you have the opportunity to make comment if any are you guys. If you want to make a comment, you're welcome to do so on this question. Yeah. No? You guys good? Okay.
I will say something, okay. Actually. So it is a tough issue, and I would love for there to be corner crossing. I know exactly where I would hunt right now. I am serious. It would be a good thing to me. I'm an avid hunter, and I'm pretty much primarily a public land hunter. I like hunting public land. I don't even pursue private land. Because I think when you can successfully hunt on public land where it's more difficult, you're greater rewarded for that. But the issue is there are court cases that say that a landowner owns a certain amount of air above their property. And so there is legal precedent that if you cross the corner, and how close is that corner? Is it a pinpoint? Is it a foot? Is it... You know, you would have to be right on the corner line in order to cross to legally say that you didn't trespass. So I actually worked on a bill in 2015 that helped establish access points through those crossings, but it was voluntary with the landowner, and they would actually get like a tax credit if they're provided a public access point through their property so that individual could go from one corner to another corner. So it is an incentives-based approach and trying to bring the landowner in to be part of it and to not be upset because somebody's just treading back there and walking through his property. So,
thank you. All right. Did I see your hand up? Go ahead.
Thank you. I think everybody'd agree that in this session, Medicaid expansion is going to be front and center once again. I believe, Jed and I, you were the only one who had a chance to vote on the issue when you were in the Senate. You voted against it. I asked each of you to just explain where you're coming from on this issue, and I'd also ask respectfully that each of you include in your answer how you intend to vote. You know, when you go to heaven, there's a yes and a no, but there's not a maybe. So if you can give us a yes or a no, I think that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
And Carl, you're first on this one. Lucky you.
Well, I think our legislators at the time did a really great job with Medicaid expansion, and it has helped out tens of thousands of Montanans in the state, and I would hate to see them potentially lose coverage if we were not able to renew Medicaid. In general, I would say, barring, I'd have to see exactly what the legislation is proposing, that, every aspect of it is, of course, reasonable. But in general, I would say that I would vote yes to renew Medicaid.
Caleb?
Just simply, I'll be a no. Essentially, exists what is known as a Medicaid expansion cliff, and essentially if you start making over X amount of dollars, then you will lose that coverage entirely. So essentially Medicaid expansion is a state-sponsored poverty trap. And so, and that is not a proper role of the state to essentially in that aspect, and I'd be a no. And it's just a massive spending as well. Thank you.
Alex? I would be a yes. I don't want it to sunset. There are many people in River Rock specifically that rely on Medicare, Medicaid. This isn't something you use if you have other options. This is something you use if you need it, if it's necessary. Otherwise, you'd go to another healthcare provider. If this sunsets, and if you have to utilize the hospital, if you break an arm, you're going to have to utilize the hospital. If you're in financial situation where you have to rely on Medicaid, Medicare, you're not going to be able to get other health care coverage. So you're going to go to the hospital, and they're going to bill you, and you're going to be in a debt trap. And that's what's going to happen. The hospital is going to lose money. The individual is going to lose money. It's going to be a lose-lose.
Thank you.
I don't know where to go in 60 seconds on this question. First off, the problem with Medicaid expansion, and you can't confuse the expansion part with traditional Medicaid. The expansion part came out of the Obamacare bill, what I call the Unaffordable Health Care Act. So the expansion part expands Medicaid to everyone within 130% of the federal poverty level. That's everyone. I was knocking doors one time talking with constituents. A young man, he's 25, 26 years old, and he brought up his biggest issue was that he wanted Medicaid expanded. And I said, well, are you on Medicaid? And he goes, yes, I'm on Medicaid. And I said, well, how many hours do you work during the week? And he goes, well, about 20 hours. And I said, can you work more than 20 hours? And he goes, yeah, I suppose I could. And I said, do you at all feel guilty being a young man who's able-bodied, could work more, you're fit? Taking these resources when you could be contributing, working more and contributing to the program rather than taking from. And he admitted to me and he said, yes, I probably shouldn't be doing this, but right now it's just the best choice for me and my family. So what it does is it incentivizes people, able-bodied people who can work more, it incentivizes them to not work more because they want this benefit. And that was the cliff that Caleb was talking about. Once you go over that limit, you just lose all the benefits. So the incentive is to stay under that limit, which incentivizes poverty and working less and taking from the system rather than contributing to the system. So that's why I voted no.
Thank you. Next question. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is to both of the Republican candidates. Project 2025, the Republican platform states, and I quote, conservatives in states and D.C. should push hard as possible to protect the unborn in every jurisdiction in America, end quote. It says nothing about the life of the mother. What specific programs and public assistance have you developed or intend to develop to support the quality of life for the child and family left behind without a mother who died because of denied access to abortion?
Caleb, you'll start.
So essentially, it is very hard to find somebody in the pro-life movement that would say that the life of the mother is less important than the child there. And in fact, I carried what probably on the left would consider to be the most heinous pro-life bill was one of my first bill to carry. It's called the Personhood Amendment. And essentially that would be an amendment in the Montana Constitution that would define life beginning at conception with the exception of if the mother's life is threatened. I never met anybody within the pro-life movement that does not have that has that view that the mother's life is somehow less important than the child's.
Alex. Oh, no. She asked the Republicans. We'll come back to the Republicans. Thank you. Jedediah.
So I think I lost part of your question at the end there, but I think you were talking about should that situation happen and a mother didn't get an abortion and she died or something, what would happen as far as like services go to help the child is what I was kind of gathering. And I cannot remember the bill number, but we did do some work and I did support the legislation that helped and made it easier for adoption services in the state. And I wish I knew more at this point. I just can't remember the details of that bill, but we have had legislation to try to help children while we are promoting the life of the child. So,
okay, Carl or Alex, do either of you have a comment you'd like to make?
Let Carl go first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd say in general that, you know, I will support a woman's right to choose, being a person who, you know, with an education in the sciences, you know, I trust the decisions that are arrived at, you know, between a woman and her doctor. They have the training, the know-how to understand what is the best possible situation for both the mother and the child. And I just believe that, you know, we have to be able to believe in those folks.
So many of the arguments for abortion, for being opposed to it, stem from religion. My parents were missionaries. They studied theology in the Allen Bible Institute, State of New York. My grandparents were missionaries. So I grew up with a Bible in my hand pretty much, and I understand Christianity pretty well. There are, I think, interpretations that aren't correct as a means to defend why abortion should not be allowed. I think it's as simple as we need to believe in the science, right? I'm not a scientist. I don't have a degree. I didn't study it or dedicate my entire life to biology, understanding when conception begins or when it does not. So I have to rely on those folks that dedicated their life to this field. And that's where my stances lay on abortion and women's health care. Not the religious grounds. And I don't think the religious grounds are very strong anyway for being opposed to it.
All right. We do have time for one more question. Then I'm going to go back and get people who already asked a question if they actually have a follow-up question, because I'm trying to give everybody a chance. Is there? Okay, go ahead.
Just want to say thank you for running. It's a big commitment. This is for all the candidates. There seems to be an increasing number of biological men and males competing in women and female sports. Do you support biological men and males competing in women's and female sports? And do you believe there should be locker room separation and why?
And actually, it's going to be Caleb who starts again, even though, because that wasn't for all of you. Your turn to start.
Okay. No, man should not be competing against a woman, period. And both Jed and I have supported legislation in the past that prohibited that. Unfortunately, that legislation was struck down by our extremely partisan judiciary. But no, a man should never compete against a woman in any sport. Thank you.
Alex.
I would say it's a complicated question, and there's a complicated answer to it. It depends, I think, when someone started to transition. If they transition later in their life and they've already been a male for so long and their body's already been built with testosterone for so many years, there would be a competitive advantage to how they could perform compared to other athletes. That would be unfair. But if they transition when they're very young and it doesn't have much of an effect on their body, I think it would be fine. Again, it's one of those things where I have to refer to people with degrees in science that study this their entire lives, because I'm not very well versed, right? I'm a soldier, I'm a Montanan, This isn't my expertise, but I do rely on their opinions to formulate my own, and that's where I lay.
Thank you.
What's really sad is after decades of individuals fighting for women's rights and equal treatment in a society that really has historically been dominated by men. I mean, there were times and probably countries now where women are still property, you know, or considered property. And we've made great strides in America here to give that equal treatment to women and to not be dominated in every aspect by a man. And we're seeing now in our culture is like flipped upside down. And we're literally, we've given women this right to like have their own sports where they can compete amongst themselves. And now, not the Republican Party, but the Democrat Party is pushing to allow these biological males into that realm where they're once again being dominated by men in their own space. So no, I'm 100% opposed to it. We all know that it's a man competing against women, and we keep seeing case after case after case after case of women being overcome and subdued by these men. And so, yes, I would support legislation to prohibit that if we ever brought it up again, and I think it's a travesty for women in general.
And then finally, Carl.
Well, I'll say that, you know, I mean, as a cis-hetero white man and being someone that, you know, had the fortune of being born into the body that I was, you know, that I felt my entire life I was meant to be in, that this would, you know, often I would need to, you know, confer with the people that are actually affected by any legislation that we are attempting to propose. Because, again, I don't know what that's like. To feel like you're in a body that you don't feel is your own. So I would speak with both, you know, folks that are, you know, experiencing that issue, and with athletes. I have known, I worked with for a while an Olympic level biathlete, and you know, she would remind me every time that this issue came up, like this is not an issue, and we have competed in sports with trans women, and they are not given some sort of advantage in the sport. As often as necessary, I will defer to the communities that are actually affected by the decisions that we're charged with making.
Thank you. Anybody who asked a question have a follow up? Because I kind of ignored you if you had your hand up already. Do you have a follow up question?
Do you want a follow up or an original?
No, we need to stop the original questions. But if you have a follow up, I.
Oh, you want me to
it was a follow-up to your question.
Oh, that's fine then, too.
I'm sorry. Actually, I do have a follow-up, unfortunately. Jedediah, you did come to my door in 2022, and it was just weeks after Roe v. Wade was overturned. And I said to you, do you understand that because of this, millions of women are going to die? And you stood there for a moment, and your response was, I choose to advocate for the unborn child.
That's not a question.
I don't know what the question. What's the question?
The question is, as your brother stated, is that truly what you believe, that the women who are in a situation where they might have to have an abortion, that you would vote for the child over her life?
I don't remember that at all or stating that, but there is a difference between elective abortions and medically assigned abortions, which would be like an ectopic pregnancy. Something that would, where the life of the woman would be in jeopardy. What I'm talking about and what I refer to is elective abortions. So elective abortions are those instances where women are not in jeopardy of losing their life and they choose to have an abortion and terminate that pregnancy for whatever reason. My question back would be, have millions of women died? We're actually seeing more abortions now since Roe v. Wade was overturned than what we were before Roe v. Wade. Absolutely. So, okay. I disagree.
All right.
That's,
yeah. Anybody else want to comment on this one? All right. Did you want to follow up on the same topic? Are you good? Where are we at?
Well, yes. I would just say... love for people to speak to the denial of Medicare
of medical care, because that is happening in states where there are abortion bans, where a woman who's having a miscarriage does not receive the treatment she needs, because you can't necessarily tell when a woman enters the hospital if it's a induced miscarriage or is a natural miscarriage. So doctors are not providing the care that women need right now in the country. So I would love for you all to speak to that. How do we keep providing high-level medical care to women?
And Alex, you're first on this one.
So one great way is through things like CI-128. Like, this is a public initiative, too. This is something that the people are pushing that elected officials are trying to kill. Like, women's health care needs to be supported. We can't cast it down, people's lives, because of religious beliefs, right? We have to make these judgments based on science. When life begins, what conception means, all these things. And if the science is telling us that the state's understanding of, you know, abortion and killing an unborn child is wrong, we need to trust them. I think we're putting people's lives in danger by trying to force religious point of views onto people when they create these laws. I'm in total support of women's health care.
Jedediah.
So I actually disagree with Alex that religion isn't the only reason why people oppose abortion. There's something in our Constitution that says that every human in America has a right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and life is the first word. And if you don't have life, you can't have liberty or the pursuit of happiness. What is a travesty when you talk about women and safety and doctors and having access to that is the Republicans tried to pass a bill, or we did pass a bill, that would have required a woman who is getting an abortion pill, I'm not talking about the morning after, I'm talking about the pills where she's further into her pregnancy, to have to consult with a doctor in order to get those pills. It was shown in committee that sex traffickers and how easy it is to get access to these pills without consultation with a doctor. Sex traffickers are using that to gain those pills and using them to abort the babies from their captives. And additionally, depending on how far a woman's pregnancy, how far in the term she is, using those pills can be incredibly dangerous to the woman as she's bleeding out by herself in the bathroom. So as a woman's safety bill, we propose that they would consult with a doctor so that there is a medical professional looking at her situation, looking at her case, maybe getting an ultrasound, seeing how far the pregnancy is. And we pass that bill, Democrats sued, bill gets thrown out, just like usual. So, okay. Yeah. I don't know how to end that. I probably ran out of time already. But.
And Carl?
You know, to avoid risking, you know, repeating myself, I mean, or things that Alex Colafrancesco has said, you know, I would support, of course, you know, I support CI-128. And for these decisions to be made between a healthcare professional and, you know, the person experiencing the issue. So I don't know if there's any more that I really have to say on that.
Okay. I pretty much don't have a whole lot more, but I will kind of address this whole it only stems from religion aspect, and I'll just say no, it doesn't, and yes, it cuts both ways for both the pro-life and the pro-choice movement. We actually had a bill from a Democrat representative here in Gallatin County that was literally to codify abortion for religious access and everything, and that Democrat senator, his entire argument was essentially that in his religion there, the abortion is spoken about and allowed. The Satanic Temple also has made abortion a part of their main platform. And so essentially it does go both ways. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we need to move on to closing statements. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to make their closing statement, and we will start with Carl.
When I was about 12 or 13 years old, I had just finished the very reluctant task of watering our lawn And then I took the hose and just threw it in a pile underneath of our deck. And my dad came along and he was like, well, what's this about? And I was like, well, Dad, it's just how I found it. And as he started to pick up the hose and roll it around his arm to put it away a bit more neatly, he said to me, you know, well, Carl, sometimes it's better to leave things a little bit better than we found them. And this is a mantra that I mean, he was talking about a garden hose, but this is a mantra that I have, you know, kept with me throughout my entire life. And it is a mantra that I will continue to use in serving the people of Belgrade.
Caleb.
Thank you. Well, just a little bit more about me. I first got interested in politics back in high school in 2007 when my late grandpa turned me on to Ron Paul back in the day. And so that's how I got my start there. And I worked for various political organizations as well as the Republican Party. I was on Gianforte's congressional staff when he was in Congress. And so essentially what it boils down to, the reason I originally ran was because conservatives in the House District 68 were not being properly representative, and the majority of House District 68 is conservative, were not being properly representative by their current Republican. So I ran, and since then, the voters have always overwhelmingly sent me back in the primaries. And so I just asked House District 68 for that vote again. Thank you.
Alex.
I'm running because I want to help the people of House District 68. They rely on Medicaid, Medicare. I don't want it to sunset on them. They need money for infrastructure, which I wish to provide. My whole career in life has been one of service. I've only been adult for 5 years, right? But, you know, I read this long resume of things I've accomplished. And that's because serving the public, serving other people is like what I'm all about. It's what makes me happy. It's what drives me, is seeing where I can help, where I can insert myself in the community to improve things. And that's why I'm running here. I'd also like to note that even though we're all running against each other, right, no one here is the devil. We all have opposing points of view. We all disagree, but we're all Montanans at the end of the day that just disagree with each other. So thank you.
Thank you. So as I talk with voters in my district, two issues that I find are the biggest issues, again, are property taxes and the economy. And a close third is rent prices. The Republicans in the legislature have worked to address all three of these issues while the Democrats fought us the entire way. First, with a couple billion dollars as a surplus of overcollected taxes, the Republicans returned nearly $1 billion back to the taxpayers in the form of income tax and also property tax relief. The Democrats voted against those bills. The Republicans permanently cut income taxes by a full percentage point, saving the taxpayers of Montana $380 million. The Democrats voted against those tax cuts. After the property tax assessment numbers came out from the Department of Revenue and homeowners found that their property tax bills were skyrocketing, Republicans, including myself, called a special session to try and address that issue. The Democrats, again, opposed the measure, all Democrats but one in the state. And that was after the July before, them making a big ruckus in the media saying, we need a special session, we need a special session. Well, we gave them a special session. 10 of them could have called that special session, but they didn't do it. So we did it. And then they voted against us. Republicans passed bills to pay off state debt. Democrats opposed that measure. I personally passed a bill aimed at slowing down those increases in rental prices. Many Democrats opposed that bill. I again ask for your vote as I will continue to support measures that strengthen our economy and allow a more of an individual's earned income to remain in their control rather than the government's control. I will continue to work on and certainly support more measures that are aimed at reducing the burden of property taxes. Lastly, as you know from my record, I am a champion of individual freedom, and I am one of the most trusted members of the Montana House to fight for those freedoms. And I would appreciate your support, again, for House District 67.
Thank you. I'm going to break tradition here. I have a question. Is there information about the land swap somewhere? Do you know where we could send people to, if they have, because I'm confused, if they have questions, where they could go to find out more about
it? City of Belgrade website and the Belgrade School District.
So just go to those websites and find out more. We will not be doing a forum on the school and city land
there
swap.
There have been open houses as well, and I think there's another one coming up.
Oh, good. When? So we can find them on the website to find. All right. Thank you. On behalf of tonight's event sponsors, Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library, I would like to thank our candidates. We'll give them a round of applause. And all of you for attending and asking your questions. You very much responded to my request for courtesy, and I do appreciate that. And that's it. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
That was the candidate forum for the candidates for House District 67 and 68, held at the Belgrade Community Library on October 1st, 2024.